We have limited time with our good friend Jeff Merrick today. He's got to run off and do some Sportsnet stuff. I know. Very busy doing television today, Greg. So let's get right to it because I want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to hear your thoughts on this. We're going to have Rob Rossi and Joe Haggerty on the show later to give you the Boston and Pittsburgh perspectives on the Boston-Pittsburgh kerfuffle, malarkey, whatever you want to call it, from the weekend in which Sean Thornton gets an in-person hearing with the NHL for slew-footing and then pounding Brooks Orpik while he's flat on the ice. Pounding with his glove.
Okay, that was a pounding. I've seen bigger poundings in a scrum, but okay, we'll go with that.
Boy, I thought you were going to go somewhere else in that pounding comparison.
It was the weekend. It was the weekend.
It was indeed. And then also, of course, James Neal skating through Brad Marchand's skull with his leg and getting a 5-game suspension from the NHL for that. Let's start with the most recent news. The suspension came down right before we started the podcast. James Neal gets from the National Hockey League. Brendan Shanahan in the video saying they do not believe Neal's assertion that he didn't see Marchand fall in front of him.
You think?
And in fact felt that the knee to the head was intentional.
Look, by the time you get into the NHL, okay, like, I can understand that if you're playing peewee hockey, oh, I didn't see him there. There's a chance you probably didn't see him there because you're 13 years old. There's a chance that that might happen. By the time you make it to the NHL, I'm guessing you know who slash what is in front of you. Like, part of what goes into making a hockey player in the NHL, one that can pop 40 goals like breaking sticks, you kind of know who's around there. Like, not only did Shanahan not pick up what Neal was putting down on Saturday, nobody picked up what James Neal was putting down on Saturday.
That's why I always go back to the Char Patchy Reddy thing, which, by the way, I don't think should have been a massive suspension or anything, but the idea that he didn't know that was Patchy Reddy after there was already a history between those two players and between Patchy Reddy and the Bruins was nonsensical. And it's the same thing with Neal. Like, Sid tripped him right in front of Neal. Like, how do you miss? The guy's wearing a black jersey. Now, let's see. There's a small black thing on the ice you hit with your stick, and then evidently there's this massive black thing on the ice you hit with your knee. Like, it's just insane.
I know. The mitigating factor, and I think it would have been a more significant penalty than 5 games if Brad Marchand was significantly injured. Like, if he was still out, right? Or if there was a concussion to deal with.
The suspended the injury thing in this league, we've talked about it before.
Agree.
It doesn't work eye for an eye, and this pushes it into eye for an eye territory because here's the thing with Neal. This is twice now where he's attempted to injure somebody. Okay, flat out attempted to injure them, headhunted them. This time he connected with his knee. He didn't connect with Giroux, but he was headhunting. Mm-hmm. And both times the player that he was headhunting wasn't injured. So maybe he just sucks at it, right? But it doesn't change the fact that he's trying to injure people. And just like I wrote on Puck Daddy just before we came on the air, this is what kills me about the NHL. The two things that Brendan Shanahan preached since coming into this job are what? That the player's skull and brain are sacred and we need to better protect it through Rule 48 and through supplemental discipline, and that there is a percentage of players in this league that are the ones that keep on doing these things, and we need to come down with the power of Thor's hammer on these guys to make sure they stop doing it. Well, Neal might not be Matt Cook, and he might not be Raffy Torres, he might not be Pat Coletta, but he sure as shit is somebody who, on repeated occasions, clearly is attempting to injure other players. It's just that he's bad at it. So 5 games for a guy who, on multiple occasions, through warnings, through a fine, through a suspension, has attempted to injure other players, okay? And a guy who used his knee to hit a guy in the head while he was flat on the ice, mm-hmm. gets 5 games? That's it? That's the toll? That's the big message? Are you out of your mind, NHL?
Yeah, I know. No matter what Sean Thornton ends up getting, and it's probably significant, although I don't think he should get any more than what John Scott got, but nonetheless, that's for later on in the podcast. Even though it's a 5-game suspension for James Neal, okay, I still think that what James Neal did to Brad Marchand was worse than what Sean Thornton did to Brooks Orpik. And I know you like to say he pounded his face and he was concussed. The worst part, I think, was the slew foot more than anything else. But then he did help him down on the slew foot, okay? Not saying it's right, but all I'm saying is what Neal did was worse.
But it comes back to intent. What you're saying essentially is it comes back to intent, which, and you're right, because when Sean Thornton skates over, slew foots Orpik and gives him a bunch of glove punches to the face, The end result of that play in Sean Thornton's mind, I'll give him this, is not to put Orpik on a stretcher. What is the end result of a play if you're James Neal, where you skate by and knee someone in the head?
Oh yeah, like it's indefensible. The Neal play is indefensible. At least with Sean Thornton, he said, you know what? There's a couple of rabbit punches that may have just landed on the button, and that's why Brooks Orpik was apparently concussed. That's what you can say. But then somehow was fine to fly home that night. That's what led to it.
Hey, listen, man. If you want to talk about teams that play around with injury status.
I'm not saying nothing. I am not a doctor. I am not Dr. Recchi. I am not a doctor at all. I just, like many people, found it curious that he was able to fly home later on that night. But I'm not saying that he wasn't concussed. Sometimes punches can land right on the button and knock you out. I've seen worse punches in a scrum. I think we all have.
Yeah. And the glove punches. He didn't drop the gloves. He didn't attack him that way.
No.
And that way he's not Ray Emery. Which kind of, I mean, didn't Scott keep his gloves on when he was chasing around Kessel as well?
No, I think you may have pitched him. I think you may have pitched the Mets, yeah. Which really frightened Phil even more. Which frightened Kessel even more.
All right, but let's... The Scott Thornton thing we don't have to get into, but it needs to be said because it was something that was thrown back at these two hosts during the John Scott stuff, which is that John Scott is a deplorable human being who doesn't belong in the National Hockey League because he doesn't play a lot of minutes and he doesn't score goals, unlike Paragon of Virtue Sean Thornton. Now, one incident does not tarnish a legacy. The man has never been suspended before. However, when you go to ESPN and you put yourself on a pedestal and you say something like, people could probably criticize that I'm a little too honorable, I suppose, in some instances. I've been a firm believer my whole life that what goes around comes around. If you're one of those guys that suckers someone when they're down, or you go after someone that doesn't deserve it, or isn't in the same category as you, that will come back to bite you at some point. So I guess 2 out of 3 ain't bad. I mean, he believes that Orpik deserved it, but he's clearly not in the same category as Thornton, and he clearly suckered him while he was down, right?
Yeah, the thing is, I do cut Thornton, not a lot, but some slack on this one, because this isn't as if this is how he behaves all the time. I don't, and you know me, Wish, I'm a soft on crime kind of guy, right? I've always been a soft on crime kind of guy. He had a significant, and I mean significant, brain cramp. I don't believe who you are on your worst day, and I don't believe you are who you are on your best day. And that was probably Sean Thornton's worst day. So I'm not, unlike, you know, Ryan Lambert today on Buck Daddy, going to crucify Sean Thornton. And this is the end of the code. And Sean Thornton's no different than any of these other bozos, whether it's, you know, Larry Zeidel or these other guys, these monsters from the past. I'm not going to put Sean Thornton there. Not because he's had one
incident. Let's talk about the code for a second. And I'm sorry that we're doing lightning.
It always changes.
Pardon the interruption on the show right now, because I want to get all this stuff in with Merrick while he's here.
Right, yeah.
Okay, I got into it this morning as usual on Twitter. It is, after all, Monday, or a day that ends in day, so I get into it on Twitter. With people who believe wholeheartedly that if you banned fighting tomorrow, that these incidents wouldn't happen. And I need to say this now. I get the idea that maybe Ray Emery doesn't beat up Braden Holtby because if you ban fighting, there's probably not a massive line brawl going on. I get that. Let's agree to that score. I was wrong on that. But if you believe that banning fighting means banning revenge, that means banning sticking up for your teammate, that means banning comeuppance, you're out of your mind. All the talk that Merrick and I have and our guests have when it comes to fighting and what happens if you get rid of it, a lot of people think that's just policing. A lot of people think that's just, oh, well, you know, if you take the cork out of the bottle, the champagne's going to spray all over the place. It's not just that. What happens to those players that do fight now, whose job it is to get a measure of revenge against a guy like Brooks Orpik? What happens then? Do you think it all just becomes clean hits? You know what it becomes? Spearing, elbowing, things that won't get them the 10-game ban that a fight would, but delivers the message that they're paid to deliver. So ban fighting. Go ahead. Get rid of it. And then watch a guy get speared for what Orpik did. Or watch Orpik take an elbow to the head, knowing that the worst thing that happens is 5 in a game. Just watch. Because you're out of your mind if you don't think that's where it's going.
Because, and we've seen this before, and we've, I think, said this before. Fighting is not the dirtiest thing in the game. at all. And somehow magically, if you take fighting out, somehow this becomes a clean game. Poppycock. That's not true at all. Now, I think a lot of fights are useless in the NHL and have been for quite some time. But there are ones that are actually good safety valve fights. I mean, how many times have you seen a game calm right down after the fight? Tons of times. Happens all the time. Now, if you don't allow that valve to open every now and then, and again, we're talking about question mark territory because we really don't know. All we can do, both wish me, you listening to the podcast right now, Brendan Shanahan, Gary Bettman, Colin Campbell, whomever, all we're dealing with is a hypothetical and a big question mark. We don't know what will happen. Mm-hmm. I think we all have a pretty good idea of what will happen considering the emotional nature of this game within the culture of hockey, just in the NHL itself, which goes back to 1917, to say nothing of what happened before that. It has always been a game that A, has no respect, B, has been rough, and C, has been occasionally slash almost always a dangerous sport to be part of. And I tweeted this out on Saturday, too. I heard a lot of stuff about respect on the weekend. Players don't respect one another. Show me this magical time when they did. Just tell me one. Not even an era. Tell me one year when the NHL had respect in it from the players. This is not a property that breeds respect. It is not a sport that does the way it's played in North America. That's the caveat.
Thank you. And let's hit on that. The NHL is a unique animal. North American hockey is a unique animal. I'm so tired of people pointing to European leagues, college hockey, other levels of hockey, and saying, well, they don't have fighting there and the cheap shots aren't running rampant. You don't think that the NHL culture is different than other leagues, than college hockey, mm-hmm. than the Swedish league? Like, you don't get the idea that it's been hammered into people since they were on double-bladed skates that you stick up for the guy next to you by any means necessary? Like, you don't think that's an ingrained part of the culture? You don't think that thrives and continues if you ban fighting?
And that's the key, too. If you really are serious about it, I mean, this doesn't happen overnight. I mean, this is sea change here. You have to talk about changing the entire culture of the NHL. You can yell and scream and stomp your feet all you want about it right now. But what you're really complaining about, I think, is culture change, if you're that offended by it. Mm-hmm. Which is funny, too, because I always say this to myself, you know, what attracted you to the NHL in the first place? Like if you complain about it as vociferously as you do now, because this has always been the way it is. What brought you here in the first place? What made you look at this sport and say, I really like this sport. I want to be a part of it. If you are so offended now by the culture of violence that exists in the National Hockey League, what brought you here in the first place?
And hey,
knowing that it has always been like this. There has never been a time where there wasn't like this on-ramp of butterflies and unicorns and lollipops where everything was fine and dandy and fun and safe and everyone got along and it was fantastic. We all allegedly loved it. No, there's always been conflict. There's always been drama. There's always been violence. There's always been questionable play. It has always existed like this. So to those that complain about it now, I always ask the same question. What brought you here? How did you get here to complain about it now? How did you become a fan in the first place when this game hasn't changed since the NHL sold out a guy by the name of Eddie Livingston in Toronto and turned the NHA into the National Hockey League?
Hey,
what brought you here?
Listen. And you can accuse me of setting up straw man like Dello is or talk about how, you know, whatever you want to say about this fighting debate. Go ahead. Listen, if you want to make the argument that fighting's not a deterrent in 2013, fine. We can have that argument and you probably win it because it's probably not. I mean, it used to be. There used to be a necessity for a guy like Clark Gillies to skate around for the Islanders so they could win cups because that's the way it used to be. That's fine. But what about the idea that the guys who fight now would just find another way to do their job? Because you know what? Yeah, a guy like John Scott might not be in the league if they're not fighting, but the role of the guy who's there to protect the guy next to him, or the role of the guy who's there to get some measure of revenge, that's not leaving if fighting leaves. That's always going to be there. That's an ingrained part of the National Hockey League culture. Okay? So what happens to that guy? What happens then? Ban fighting. Go ahead. Is it going to ban revenge? Is it going to ban a guy elbowing another guy because he thinks he took out his teammate? Of course not.
Ask yourself this. James Neal a fighter?
No.
What do you do on Saturday?
You need a guy in the head.
Oh, okay.
Well, but in fairness to James Neal, he did answer the bell. I think it was the Pruka hit a few years back mm-hmm. where he boarded Pruka. It was a play where it was actually shoulder and not head, and then he answered the bell to fight. We followed the code, as it were. My point is that, you know, your point's right. there's still going to be cheap shots. My point is that some of the guys who fight today, or sometimes when we see these fights as a measure of revenge for a teammate, as a guy playing the role of enforcer, okay, the role of enforcer is still going to exist. He might not fight because he'll get 10 games or 15 games for it. We might not see a gloved assault of another player, but you don't think he's not going to stand up for his teammate. You don't think there's going to be a Sean Thornton type dishing out intimidation, as is his job, as is the only way he can stay in the league and earn a salary. You got to be Pollyanna to the 10th degree if you don't think that that stuff's not going to still be in the game, even without fighting.
Having said that, what should have happened to Brooks Orpik was you take a number and you line him up. If you didn't like the hit on Louis Erickson, and by the way, Louis Erickson, what do you think? This is twice now.
Blame the victim, huh?
This is twice
now. Is
that
how it works?
No, I'm just saying. Well, when it happens to the victim more than once, you know, it's like the Incredible Hulk. Was it Chris Rock's line? Every town that he goes to, everyone hates him, wants to run him out of town. Eventually, you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, well, maybe the problem here is me. This is twice now. We're not even at Christmas. This is twice now.
Hey.
We got run at.
But aren't you the author of the Bruins reap what they sow theory?
Part of it. Yeah, part of it, because you know you put yourself out there as that tough team, and teams are going to play you tough, and then things are going to happen. Absolutely. I think that's part of it as well.
All right. You got to run, but question of the day today is, if you were the NHL, if you were Brendan Shanahan, what would you give Neil? What would you give Thornton? We know what Neil gets now. He got 5, but what would you have given Neil?
Hang on. Mike D writes, I love how Merrick turns every topic into his knowledge of NHL's history. Sorry for trying to provide context, Mike D. I apologize for that. Sorry, what's the question?
The question was, sir, as is the question of the day to our readers, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick, Twitter, hashtag at MVSW, or puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. You are Brendan Shanahan. You are the National Hockey League. We know that Neil, in for real life, got 5 games. What would you have given him, and then what would you give Sean Thornton for his transgression?
I would not give Sean Thornton anything more than John Scott got for his hit on Louis Erickson. So I'd say 7.
Okay.
I'd give him the identity. And as for James, I would have given James Neil more.
Yeah, I would have given him 8.
So, I think Thornton?
No, Neil.
Neil?
I give him 8. I mean, I can't wrap my brain around I've been a staunch defender of the Department of Player Safety in a lot of ways, right? But if you're gonna lay out your mantras, your modus operandi, why you exist, what you're trying to accomplish, and all of that is encapsulated by what James Neil did, repeat offender who has no regard for player safety, who knees a guy in the head as he's on the ice, then come correct with a punishment, will you please? 8 games. As for Thornton, I go, you know, I'm with you. I don't think that the end result is what he was what he was looking for. I think you're right. If you match that up with what Scott did, Scott received.
No previous offense.
Yeah, no previous offense. Just like John Scott, guy who was an angel before the season. Treated like the devil now. I go with 7 games for sure. Yeah,
I think it should be the same penalty.
And then finally, while we have you, FNUF, what do you give him?
1. I give him a single. I still don't know. I still don't know why he didn't shoulder up on that hit. Again, blame the victim. Blame the victim. But Kevin Miller, why don't you just like in that? I don't understand players that. I mean, I guess I understand it because you think you're either going to draw the penalty or you're going to get a free pass and get the puck. But why doesn't anybody shoulder up at the boards anymore?
Yeah.
Nobody shoulders up at the boards.
Yeah. What are you working on? What do people look out for?
It's,
this
game you're doing in today? About 2:18 Eastern right now. So in about an hour and 15 minutes, we'll be taping an edition of the Strategy Room today, an Olympic-sized edition. Well, Olympic-themed edition, rather. Talking about Olympics, mainly past Olympics, 98, 202, and 206 with Theo Fleury, who, as you peel back the layers of the onion, has been involved in some pretty significant things in the Olympic, whether it's the Roman Hammerlick incident that set Wayne Gretzky off, whether it's being the first shooter in 98 against Dominik Hasek. Theo Fleury is going to be aboard. Marty Turco is going to be aboard to talk about what happened in 2006. Ooh, sacre bleu. And Doug McLean for a little bit of passion, anger, and East Coast spice will be aboard on the strategy
Ooh,
room tonight.
East
yeah.
Coast
so
spice.
So we'll talk about that around 3:30. So it should be done around, I don't know, 4:30, 5 o'clock.
All right, cool. Cool. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for hopping in, Jeffy. I know it was a pretty newsworthy weekend, and I'm glad you found time to address these issues.
Dude, I know. Listen, I wish I could spend like a full hour or more on the podcast today, because the minute it happened, I thought to myself, oh, I can't wait to get the podcast on Monday, taping time 3:30
Again, listen, you're one of my favorite guests. I appreciate you coming on the program. Up next on the Greg Wyshynski Show.
Call back anytime, Greg.
Up next on the Greg Wyshynski Show, Joe Haggerty and Rob Rossi to talk about this very incident. And with that, we start the Greg Wyshynski Show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I would be pulling that thing out all the time. You would too. It's like the philosophy of the Zen rock garden. You can't see all the rocks standing in one place.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Good beer, lots of beer, too much beer.
I'm having the ghost of trades present. You look like Matt Stajan.
Debate hockey.
Does Daryl Sutter have a front row of teeth?
I don't know.
If he does, I've never seen them. Have you seen them?
No, I have not.
They're hiding somewhere. I don't know where they are.
Why you make fun of KHL all the time? It is hockey. You're an ugly American making fun of KHL.
Pop culture.
Joining us now on the line are a porn star in and of himself.
Did he just call me a porn star?
And more hockey.
I'm actually in the Sportsnet wardrobe room. Right across from where Greg Wyshynski, who you know quite well, Mr. Batman, he does a great impression of you, had to change his pants with our stylist, Ed Berman.
Oh, Mr. Diarrhea Pants over there with the yellow pants that look terrible on HDTV.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Hello, everybody. Sorry, I was about to tweet Tyler Dello during the show. Again, listen, I'm speechless when it comes to this idea that people honestly don't believe that there is going to be other avenues to avenge a teammate if you ban fighting. Like, Dello's point is, he doesn't like when I say if you ban fighting, elbowing and spearing and high-sticking will go way up, as if the NHL is going to watch some Thornton-esque plug spear guy and go, well, there's certainly nothing we can do about this. Yeah, but it won't be the automatic suspension that fighting would be. And would it even be a suspension? Who knows? The point is that the idea that if you ban fighting, you ban the role of an enforcer, you ban the idea that's ingrained in North American hockey culture that if your guy gets taken out, you take out the guy who took him out. Like, that's going to end if you ban fighting? Good God, man. It is so naive. It runs counter to everything we know about this game in North America, and particularly in the National Hockey League, for like a century. I don't get it, man. I know it's a lazy, easy plank in the platform of anti-fighting people because they want to believe that fighting is somehow, the virus infecting this game. And if you eliminate it, then oh my God, watch the clean play flow. But I just think you're wrong on that. And I'm not saying fighting's a deterrent. Okay, I don't think in this case or in 2013 we can say that fighting is a deterrent. It's not 1982. It's not 1992, okay? I will agree with you that it is not the same thing as it was in the past. But the idea that the role of the enforcer, the role of the guy who is paid to make the other team know they can't just take out Louis Erickson, the idea that that role will be eliminated if you ban fighting is so unbelievably naive. It runs counter to everything we know about the National Hockey League and National Hockey League culture. But go ahead, yeah. Bam fighting, everything's fine. It'll look like the Olympics. Joining us now on the line is a man who watched all this fun go down over the weekend. He's a favorite on this show and a divisive guest amongst many of the listeners. I don't know if you know this, Hags. Joe Haggerty of Comcast Sportsnet New England joins us now. Hello, Hags. How are you?
Wish, if you can't have divisive guests on the program, what can you have on the program? You know, come on.
Well, let me get your take on this. I mean, I think I know where you are in the fighting debate. I think we are simpatico in many ways on it. I mean, am I wrong in thinking that the revenge, the comeuppance, the role of the enforcer would just change into something dirtier if you ban fighting? Like, that aspect of the game doesn't leave with fighting, does it?
Well, to be honest with you, I think if they did ban fighting, I mean, the way the enforcer role might mutate is back into the one-dimensional player that's all he can do. Because let's say you're going to give a game misconduct and a major to a guy that fights, and I would imagine that's how the NHL would do it if they were really trying to get rid of it, is just kick you out if you got into a fight. There's still going to be fights in games, and things are going to happen. You know, what if a team decides, all right, we'll just have one forward on the 12 that will be out there to do something like that if they expect a game where there's going to be a lot of trouble. Let's say like the next time the Bruins and Pittsburgh play and that guy goes out and he's out there just in case anything happens and you burn a forward and then you play with 11 guys. I mean, I think there are different ways it could go down. I still think there, bottom line, what I'm telling you is I still think there would be fighting on some level in the game of hockey, even if they tried to ban it and get rid of it. And I heard what you were just saying about it being not being a deterrent. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be flip and I don't want to be callous about this because, you know, it's not 1985 anymore. And I agree along with everybody else that what Sean Thornton did is totally unacceptable. It was gross. It made you want to cover your eyes because it was such a degree of just violence. It was an assault. I mean, it looked, you know, more criminal than anything that you would see in the game of hockey. But do you think that Orpik might think twice about, you know, going full speed into a guy and taking it a run at a skill guy on another team like that in the first shift of a game, especially against the Bruins? I think he might. And in that way, maybe it is a deterrent to try to fight guys and challenge guys. Yeah. Like I said, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying I think that's how the sort of old school and hockey players that's still in the league and a lot of guys still view justice and fighting and enforcers and fighting being a deterrent and, you know, taking care of guys that will run around hitting people and play on the edge but refuse to fight. I still think there's a lot of that mentality out there, Wish. And they just look what Barnaby wrote the other night about Marchand deserving that knee to the head from James Neal on his blog. I mean, I think that kind of mentality is still out there a lot in the NHL where they feel like if you have a guy that plays on the edge and is trying to hurt people and is doing untoward things and he won't fight, well, then they're going to find a way to get him at some point. And that's probably what James Neal did in that game, is something had happened to him that Marchand had done either that game or last year in the playoffs, and he saw an opportunity to get him back, and he did it.
Yeah, and Barnaby also said that Orpik, whether it was a clean hit or a dirty hit, needs to get assaulted, basically. That's the other thing Barnaby said.
But, exactly, and I think that mentality is out there. You know, and
yeah, sure.
Look, this is, let me just put you inside the head of Sean Thornton. This is what I think he was sort of thinking before he snapped and lost it and started pounding a guy in the head that was down on the ice. The game before that, Montreal, Johnny Boychuk, it's a borderline hit from Pacioretty. He gets taken out in a stretcher in the first period. Then the next game, first shift of the game, Brooks Orpik, just a missile hitting Louis Erickson, clearly making a statement. This was the last game these two teams were going to play against each other during the regular season. It was very clear that Pittsburgh wanted to come in and make a statement in case those two teams play each other in the playoffs. He sees Louis Erickson go off on Queer Street and go down the dressing room, and clearly he's concussed and he's done it the second time he's had one in a couple of months. He's a guy that's out there to protect his teammates, to intimidate the opposition, to really, you know, keep that kind of stuff from happening, to deter that stuff from happening. And he saw one guy after another in two straight games getting wheeled off, and he's starting to say to himself in his head, what is it now, open season on Bruins players? Everybody feels like they can come in and take out our guys, and felt like he had to do something about it and tried to fight him the honorable way. He wouldn't do it, and it turned into that ugliness, that awfulness on the ice. But you know, I don't have a truly difficult time understanding where his mindset was and where he was coming from, because, like I said, I still think there are a lot of guys in the NHL that feel that way. And when you talk to players and they're honest, there's a lot of them that feel like, you know, in some perverse, violent, gross way, justice was served that night and what happened. I don't think that way, but I think there are others that do.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but, like, you said try to fight him, try to do things the honorable way. What's honorable about making a guy answer for a clean hit? Like, that's the thing I don't get about this. Like, I hate that about this league. I hate the fact that Orpik or Dustin Brown, any of these guys that know how to hit, Cronwall's another one, you know, have to get called out by a Sean Thornton for delivering a clean hit.
Wish, I would debate the veracity of how clean it was. I don't think it was the worst thing that I've ever seen, and I don't think it was like a 5 to 10 game suspension, but I think it was a clear run at a guy, and he was going to hit him whether he had the puck or he didn't, because he didn't have the puck. And, you know, that you can make determinations as to how close the puck was to him. You know, was it in the vicinity? Could he hit him? Had enough time gone by where it was fine or it wasn't, like all that stuff. But to say it was squeaky clean, I'm not sure is right. And when you talk to other players around the league, they will say that Brooks Orpik has a reputation for doing that stuff and then not living up to it if he starts going after other players, trying to run them and potentially hurt them. And, you know, when those guys do those things, and Marchand's another one, and I think that's part of the reason that happened to him, when they do that over and over again and they don't answer for it, those kind of things may happen. There's a greater likelihood something like that could happen. I don't buy the whole notion that it was a clean hit to start with. I think in the game of hockey, when you take a run at another guy's best players, they're going to notice and they're going to respond to it. That's just the way the game goes.
As far as Thornton goes, I mean, he delivers these quotes on ESPN about the code, about what he does, being an honorable guy. I mean, I agree with you in principle that he's just doing his job, right? But that's all down the trash now, right? Like he can't be this paragon of virtue anymore about the code after what happened, can he?
No, I don't think so, and I don't expect him to. And look, the fact that he was almost crying when he was talking about, his voice was cracking, his eyes were welling up when he was talking about what happened afterwards, saying, you know, I can't say I'm sorry enough and I made a mistake, all that stuff. Like he knows he's been a vocal guy, and he's been a guy that, you know, to his credit, 11 years in the NHL and 15 years of pro hockey, had always been a pretty honorable, clean player, and a guy that played the game the right way as much as you can as an enforcer, and, you know, didn't go after guys that were vulnerable and would stop punching a guy in a fight if he was down or if his jersey was over his head or if he was in a spot where it could really hurt him. And he wasn't a guy that would take runs at people on the ice and really do things like that to create fights. You know, he had a very specific role. I think he takes it very seriously, and he does believe in that quote-unquote code that seems to be going by the wayside these days. But you're right. You can't do something like that and then still prop yourself out there as the example of virtue in the world of enforcing and fighting. And, you know, unfortunately, I agree with Don Cherry, this wasn't a fight, and so you can't really use this to say, you know, we need to get rid of fighting because this happened in a fight, because it wasn't a fight between Orpik and Thornton. It was, like I said, an assault more than a fight. But I do think the fact that he's an enforcer and that he snapped and this is what happened is definitely going to give more ammunition to the anti-fighting people that are trying to go after it and get it out of the sport. There's no question about that.
Essentially, the argument now is that Thornton wouldn't exist were it not for fighting. So you ban fighting, then you ban guys like Thornton.
Right. And the counterpoint to that is more guys like Orpik would exist if there were no fighters, and they'd be multiplying and taking out the best players so you never got to watch them play because – these guys were targeting them for the other team to try to knock them out. And, you know, you wouldn't see the superstars anymore because nobody was around to protect them. And I think both are valid arguments. I think you can make each argument very easily and eloquently and with a lot of passion. And it's like running around in circles. You know, I don't know that we're ever going to truly see what a new NHL would look like without fighting unless they actually did ban it. I just would hope if they did decide to do it that it didn't go the wrong way, which a lot of people think it would.
No, be sunshine and rainbows. So everybody's going to hold hands. I mean, that's
everybody's going to sing Kumbaya and make s'mores around the campfire wish and just pat each other on the back and have a brewski.
No, you'd never see a cheap shot delivered to get comeuppance for a guy getting taken out. You'd never see that. I mean, fighting won't be there. So obviously, all the people that would ever do that won't be there either. What was your take?
Dr. Hook McCracken's taking out each other's eyes on the ice. Who wouldn't want to see that?
Dr. Hook. So my take on the Neil thing is I would have gone 8 games with him. I don't understand the logic the Department of Player Safety has laid out for the last couple of years. Would all point to Neil getting more than 5 games, but what's your take on Neil and Marchand?
Yeah, I'm not surprised it was only 5 games, and obviously it was more than because I love that they take into account, even though it's been a couple of years and he's not quote-unquote a repeat offender, that they do take into account that he's been suspended twice and fined before, that James Neal has a history as far as that stuff goes. And that's probably why he did get 5 rather than a couple games, 2 or 3. But I've got to wonder if there's also some leniency there because – and they're never going to say this, but because he was going after Marchand. And that's a guy that, you know, is a rat and is a guy that's a target and is a guy that other teams and other players that he's done wrong in the past and he's done dirty in the past, you know? And I wonder if something like that goes through Shanahan's head when he makes those decisions and he lessens it a little bit. And
well, it's an interesting point because – like, hold on, because Barnaby in this blog, and I wish I could give out the – I think it's on like a Tumblr or something. Like go to Barnaby's Twitter feed. You can find the blog. In his blog, he basically set up the idea that Marshawn deserved it by saying, well, he must have done something
right.
during the game. Right. Like, it's this right. nebulous,
I didn't see it, but
it had to happen. Yeah, what is that?
I think that's the old school mentality. I think that's the players that have played a long time that are still playing, guys like Thornton, and, you know, the guys that have just recently retired in the last, you know, 5-10 years, like Shanny and Barnaby. I think that's the way they view it. That's the way they view the world of the NHL, is through that prism. And I give Shanahan a lot of credit, because I think he does take so many things into account and so many factors and tries to weigh them all together, even way beyond the stuff that he talks about in the videos. And, you know, I think all of that comes into play, and that's probably part of the reason why he got 5 rather than more than that for an egregious knee to the head. Plus, Marchand wasn't injured. And obviously, we know in the NHL, whether they admit it or not, that is a factor also. And I still think, you know, because of some other factors going on, I don't think Thornton's going to get much more than 10 games. I know people are talking the rest of the regular season or like a Bertuzzi type thing, and people have tossed a lot of numbers out there. I don't see it getting to more than 10 just because of everything that led up to it, because it was Orpik that he hit, and because of the body of work that he's had throughout a long NHL career without a hearing, a suspension, even a whisper of a warning from the league before. All that stuff goes into account.
Yeah, just like John Scott, right? I mean, that's how John Scott was before he became public enemy number one.
Well, except for the quick chat between Shanny and Scott during the preseason about him, you know, trying to eat Phil Kessel during the preseason. Well,
that should have been his chat between Shanny and Randy Carlyle about chumming the water with his best players when he knows the Sharks out there.
Exactly.
Just overall on the Bees, you know, looking at the big picture, getting away from Suspension City here, that's two big wins over the weekend for them. Those are two statement wins for the Bruins over the weekend. Your thoughts on where this team is right now?
Yeah, they're in a good place right now, obviously, up towards the top of the conference and the division. And, you know, they've taken care of business in the early parts of the season here, the first few months. And it was a real nice rebound from a tough loss in Montreal to beat both the Penguins and the Leafs. But adversity is hitting and hard times are hitting for them. They are now without, after that game in Toronto last night, they're without Johnny Boychuk, Adam McQuaid, Dougie Hamilton, Chris Kelly, Louis Erickson, Sean Thornton. They're missing a ton of regular players now that have been hurt in the last few games. There's been a lot of damage done to that roster, and I think you're going to start to see them lose some games here, and hard times are going to hit. They're also, when you look at the schedule, they're going out to Western Canada now. Jerome McGinley will be playing in Calgary for the first time since he got traded tomorrow night, and they're going to play Edmonton and be back in Vancouver, too, the site of the ritualistic Stanley Cup final burnings for the first time since they won the Cup 3 years ago. it's going to be interesting to have all that stuff going down. They're the last team in the East that's taken a West Coast trip. They've played like 5 or 6 fewer games against the dominant, mighty Western Conference than everybody else in the East. So I think that plus the amount of players they have in the Olympics and the tough schedule they have coming right back from the Olympics is going to hurt them a lot down the stretch and in the second half. So they have to bank points and they have to win games right now because there's going to be a price to pay later on in the season.
Indeed. All right, Hags. Good stuff, man. I'm sure the listeners have their opinions about everything you've said, and I'm sure I'll hear those opinions on email and on Twitter for most of the for the next 48 hours. But always a good time to talk to you, man, and we'll catch you again soon.
I'm sure the people that have always loved me will still love me, Wish, and I'm sure the people that hate me will still hate me. I have no doubt about both.
Yeah, indeed. Take care, man.
You got it.
That's Joe Haggerty, Hags. Check him out on Comcast Sportsnet New England. Brian Palmer writes in, when did Bruins guys become such whiny conspiracy theorists? Marshawn Neal, did the Canucks rub off on them in 11? Well, I mean, and also, let's face it. I mean, it's not as if they don't have guys that do the same thing Orpik does, thinking of Zdeno Chara, thinking mostly of Milan Lucic, who, if memory serves, ran a goalie once. I mean, you would talk about guys taking cheap shots on the other team's best players, ran a goalie. Like a steamroller. God. There is a bit of a persecution complex sometimes with Bruins media and with fans sometimes, but, you know, it is what it is. I don't know. Will Rohr writes in, as Cacks with Hags, that's his Twitter handle, if he sleeps with his nightlight on so he can see his Claude Julien poster in the dark. Oh, man. Hey, listen, Haggerty defends his guys. What are you going to do? It happens with every beat writer. It happens all over the place. It is what it is. The Thornton thing, he spelled it out. I mean, there is, if you want to believe that this guy was just doing his job, that this guy was simply just defending a teammate, didn't intend for things to happen, get out of hand, he's not that kind of guy. I mean, you can make the argument that he doesn't deserve much. But there's no question what he did was an attack. And it was an attack on a guy who didn't want to fight, and he fought him. I mean, didn't drop the gloves, but he fought him. Merrick doesn't think it's fighting if you don't drop the gloves and pummel the guy with your bare knuckles, but he punched him. I mean, he punched him, banged his head on the ice. Okay? So that was Haggerty. It was good times. Joining us now on the line, the other bookend on this discussion, getting the Pittsburgh Penguin perspective on things, he is another good friend of the show. He is Rob Rossi of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and he joins us here on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, sans Merrick. Hello, Rossi. How are you?
I'm just explaining to your fine producer that I couldn't be better if you stuffed me in a garbage can and sent me down Niagara Falls. How are
Dude,
you,
that is that. I know that's your special slice of paradise right there. five games for James Neal. I think it should have been more. What say you?
I wouldn't have had a problem with more. Absolutely. I mean, I hate to say this because I think these things should all be judged separately, but I kind of want to see what they give Sean Thornton. I mean, if he's only going to get 10, I guess I have less of a problem with that. But I don't like what James Neal did. I don't think there's any place for it in the game. Very interested, by the way, it was worded. Though he's not a repeat offender, we can't ignore his past history. That was such intriguing wording to me regarding that. Look, I didn't like what James Neal did. I mean, if they wanted to give Sean Thornton 25 and James Neal 20, I wouldn't have had a problem with it. And if Penguin fans think I'm being nuts, well, you know, David Steckel was vilified for also not avoiding somebody. So, you know, I think you have to sometimes enforce levels of respect upon players for one another. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think these players are ever going to respect one another in this league. But that's a different story.
The differentiation between the repeat offender status and what they said in the video, I think, is because he can't be charged as a repeat offender under the CBA, meaning like the monetary hit. But he clearly has a history of this thing, and that's my issue.
That's why I was so interested in the wording of it. I mean, it's like they're clearly basically saying we basically can't consider you this monetarily, but you know, we think what you did was pretty awful. You know, I think it's Look, it was a heinous thing. I don't think it was as bad as Sean Thornton, but it was bad, and it was bad by a good degree. So
here's the difference.
I get along with James Neal. I think James Neal is a real. I think James Neal is a great hockey player. I really do. I think you make an argument. He's the guy that maybe separates the Penguins from being a pretty good team to being an elite team. When he's going, they're damn near unstoppable. Offense,
right. He's the fourth best player on the team offensively, and that's why he gets five games instead of eight, because he's important. The thing that bothers me, though, is like, even at Matt Cook's most heinous, even at Rafi Torres' most heinous, even what Sean Thornton did, all of those guys will own the moment and try to defend it. Now, in Thornton's case, I guess he didn't really defend it, but we've heard Cook and Torres in the past both say, well, that's a play that I make. You know, and maybe I need to change the way I play, but that's a play that I make, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but the league says there's something wrong with it. Both times Neal's been caught, both times Neal's been called to the carpet in the last couple of years, it's never owning it. It's never saying, I went a little crazy, or you know, it's, what do you want me to say? And then he starts off on this bullshit road with, I didn't see the guy there, or I should have modulated my skating, or... It pisses me off even more that this guy can't just own up to the fact that he's a dirty player, because he's a dirty player, Rossi.
Well, look, I'll say this. I'm going to stick by the reporting here, and as I put in a story that just posted on my website, I can tell you Ray Shiro and Dan Bosma weren't real happy with the response James Neal gave the other night. You know, they wanted to see contrition. They wanted certain words not used, and those words were not, what do you want me to say? You know, they wanted to see a better reaction publicly from a guy that they're paying $5 million to, and they didn't get that. And, I'll be very interested to see how that is handled if we ever do find out internally, because I don't think there was a lot of I don't think the two most important people in the organization that deal with guys on a daily basis, that being Ray and Dan, I know for a fact they weren't real happy with James Neal's response after the game. I will say, generally, I don't put a lot of stock into what players say after games regarding these things because, I mean, and I got along very well with Matt Cook, but Matt Cook, and I genuinely believe Matt Cook was always sorry, but it wasn't until he missed 17 games and felt threatened and felt like he needed to make a change that he did. So, I mean, you know, if you beat the living snot out of somebody and then you're sorry about it, you still beat the living snot out of them.
Yeah.
I just wish somebody would do that to me right now.
But you see, the Cook thing is always the example that we're going to use. I mean, Matt Cook is almost like the Roswell saucer crash of player safety. Like, we'll all point to this one thing that happened and say, you know what, guys can change. Guys can be different. They don't have to necessarily go down that path of being an injurious player anymore if they commit to changing. And what did it, and you hit the nail on the head. What did it take? It took the Penguins stepping up and saying, you need to stop this or you're not going to be here anymore. And he stopped it. Right?
Yeah, and that wasn't a league thing. I mean, that wasn't a league thing.
No, that was the Penguins.
It was a Penguin thing, yeah.
Right.
You know, for as much heat as they take for a lot of things, I think a lot of it's because they have Crosby and Malkin and the other teams don't. I've always said that was a shining moment for them. You know, everybody said, how can you want to take the high road when you have Matt Cook? And they said, well, we'll get rid of Matt Cook. You know? and look, Matt Cook changed, too. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, credit to him. He changed. I mean, he's a different player. And I talked to Brendan Shanahan about that last year for a good bit of time. And he said, look, the guy doesn't absolve him of what he did. And it doesn't mean he has any more strikes than he already had going into it. But, you know, he did change. It can happen. And, you know, I wonder, given the investment to James Neal, if they're going to look at him and say, look, you better change because this isn't guaranteed.
Right.
You know, we can find other guys to play with Evgeny Malkin.
But essentially,
you know, they're paying him $5 million, Greg, and they want him to be scoring 40 goals a year, which he can do. I mean, he was going to score 40 this year despite missing 15 games. Guy has 10 goals in 16 games. But you can't do that. This is a team that is going, that has six guys that are AHL regulars on their 23-man roster right now. And I understand Brad Marchand is probably the least liked opponent opposing player that the Penguins have in that locker room. And I understand that there's a history there. I mean, Marchand boarded Neal last year. I understand long memories, but, you know, you gotta be a pro in the moment. And James Neal wasn't, and I hope he learns from this, because I like watching him play hockey. I don't want to not see him for five games, and I want to see him clean up.
But you speak to the influence a team can have on a culture. I'm going to guess that the Bruins are supportive, okay, with Sean Thornton defending and trying to get a measure of comeuppance for the million-dollar asset Louis Erickson that's been taken out of their lineup by Brooks Orpik. I'm guessing that that culture fosters what Thornton did to Orpik in that game. True?
I don't know if I'm understanding this. You're saying that's why they sent Thornton?
I'm saying that if the Penguins were complicit in trying to get Matt Cook to turn around his career, the Bruins are complicit in encouraging the kind of thing that Sean Thornton did against Orpik.
Look, I don't think Claude Drouin is wrong from that, do you? I give him credit for that. I think he's basically dead. We don't like the hit. We don't like who he hit. We think the hit was borderline, and you know. Sean went out there to do an honest man's business. Look, I don't understand the code. I don't know what it is. The code seems different for me to everybody else. I mean, I think generally codes are stupid. I like laws, not codes. I like chaos, but only because I like laws, if that makes sense. And, generally the code changes, and the Bruins have their own version of the code. So do the Penguins, so do everybody else. I know this. The argument that Brooks Orpik should fight and that should stop everything, fine. If you believe that, that's great. I don't agree with you, but that's your belief. I'm not going to change your mind. But the reality, Greg, is Brooks Orpik doesn't fight. He doesn't. Last year, my colleague Josh Early talked to 14 different players, 15 players on the Penguins about fighting. One of them said he wanted it removed from the game. It was Brooks Orpik. I don't think this is a thing where Brooks Orpik doesn't want to answer for his acts. I think he believes if you can hit him hard, go at it. But this idea that they were going to get Brooks Orpik to fight, that was never going to happen. He just doesn't do it. I think he's fought five times. Yeah. So whatever their code was, it was, you know, it wasn't a code that was going to be complicit with actually playing a hockey game. But that wasn't a hockey game. That was a, you know, that was a farce. And unfortunately, we won't see it again until the Eastern Conference Finals, both teams get there. And maybe that's part of it, too, that they played three times in a matter of 3.5 weeks and that they both have a good way of getting out under each other's skin.
See,
but, you know,
hold on, Orpik.
Yeah.
As we were just talking about with Haggerty, he does have the reputation of being a guy who lays out other players and doesn't, quote-unquote, answer the bell. Do you see him that way? Do you think that he needs to answer for his hits more as an NHL player?
I think that answering the bell is the stupidest thing I've heard for this era where we are now having guys wanting to fight over every open ice hit that's delivered. I think answering the bell has its place, but as a first resort, which it seems to have become, I don't like that. And in regards to Brooks Orpik, he's allowed to be hit too. I don't understand why there has to be a fight. I've never understood that. I would be having the same discussion if it were about, you know, Franzen. You know, I just don't like that whole mentality. But I'll tell you this, and I don't know where Joe stands on this. I don't know what type of hit you can deliver in this league anymore that somebody isn't going to want to fight somebody over.
Hmm.
You know, I like hard hitting. I think there is an element of meanness in the NHL. I can promise you it's never not going to be a mean league, all right? And you're not going to legislate meanness out of these contact sports. I do think, Greg, that the NHL faces a problem very similar to the NFL. In the last 3 to 5 years, we have had a rapidly accelerating awareness and now unwillingness to accept violence in our professional sport society or in our sporting society. It doesn't necessarily jive with the violence we're willing to accept in society overall, but it seems like we want our sports to be safer. These are not safe games, the NHL and the NFL. They will never be safe games. You can try to make them safer, but they will never be safe. So I don't know how we reconcile that with this league, with this sport. I don't think we can. And I think if we do, we're not going to have the sport we like.
Good points, man. Finally, on the Penguins, while we got you, tops in the Metro Terrible Division. Crosby, 42-31. Malkin, the huge rally for 37-29. Overall, your assessment of the Penguins, the best thing about them and the biggest point of concern right now about them?
Well, you know, the point of concern right now is the injuries, Greg. I mean, they are they have six guys on the roster that would be in the AHL. I mean, you can't play long stretches with three of your top four defensemen out and not have it catch up for you. I don't care if Crosby and Malkin are healthy. And they have been for the most part. I'm still concerned about, are they able to defend against a team like Boston in their own zone? They're doing a masterful job this year of playing defense in the neutral zone and forcing turnovers. And for 58 minutes against Boston, they were magnificent. But those last 2 minutes changed the whole game. Can they defend in their own zone against teams that can cycle, can possess the puck, and can have these big bodies? I don't know that. I don't know if we'll see it until we see if they can. I mean, there's only a few teams that can do that. The thing that's impressed me most is I think Dan Byles was having a hell of a year. I really do. I think he's the injuries he's got this team through. They haven't had their full anticipated lineup once, Greg. The other thing that's going for them is, you know, they've got, when Neal's healthy, arguably four of the top forwards in the National Hockey League. And Crosby and Malkin, when they're at this level, they can take over entire playoffs. But they haven't been at this level when it counts. And I think with everything with the Penguins, Greg, we're not going to know until April. And we're especially not going to know because this division and this, you know, dog-meat-tie division that they're in is, it's just, you're not going to be able to tell if even a team that wins the East in the regular season is any good, because a lot of those points are going to come against this, you know, garbage heap of a tire fire.
Dog meat, garbage heap of a tire fire. I've never heard the Metropolitan so eloquently described, sir.
It obviously doesn't make sense, but you get what I'm going with there.
Dude, I can smell the burning canine flesh as we speak. Rossi, always a pleasure. Thank you for giving the counterbalance of Pittsburgh propaganda to the Boston propaganda on the show today. We much appreciate it, sir.
Oh, wait, I'm on propaganda now? Jeez, man. That's
all right, Rossi, take care, man.
Take care.
I love the idea that we provided balance by offering like the two most extreme people we could. It's like offering balance on like a political issue, and it's like Al Sharpton and Sean Hannity are your two voices of reason. But there you go. Rossi following Haggerty. According to Matt, by the way, producer Matt, that Orpik has fought 13 times in his career. Also producer Matt tells me that in a scant few minutes, we may have a super special guest on the show today. Phoenix Coyotes coach Dave Tippett might be joining us. So whilst we have time, we should probably get into some of your answers to the question of the day, which is that what would you give Thornton and what would you give Neil? Were you the arbiter of suspensions in the National Hockey League? Simon Mulholland writes in, I'd rather get hit in the head with a glove than a knee pad. Should be 7 for Neil and 10 for Thornton. So there's that. Scott Donnelly, Neil, 15 to 20 games. Woof. Reprehensible. Thornton, 5 to 10 games. Idiotic, but intent was not to hurt the guy the way he did. You know they'd never give Neil 10 games or more if the guy wasn't injured. Kevin Gazzelli writes in, 25 for Thornton, 15 for Neil. The optics on Thornton's were worse, but Neil's a repeat offender. Both were gross. It seems as though the idea is that mayhaps the punishments are not going to be severe enough. Pension Plan Muppets, a.k.a. Puppets, 15 games and 30, 15 for Neil, 30 for Thornton. Also ask Haggerty about being such an unapologetic fanboy. Well, that's just mean. I mean, he, after all, was a guest on this program, wasn't he? Matt Kay, at the very least, Neil should have received an in-person hearing, because even if the league still handed down 5 games as a sentence, the in-person meeting at least gives the illusion that they're taking the offense seriously. Well, that and also it the dirty little secret about the in-person hearing is that it's a major inconvenience to the player. I mean, it's that versus picking up your phone and talking to some people. If you have an in-person hearing, you've got to go and fly to New York and be in there and get your representatives and do the whole bit. It's a shitty thing. I mean, like, you don't want to do it. So I don't get it. I don't understand why it was a phoner either. It didn't make any sense. Let's see here. This is Kristen Sweeney. Hello, all. As a Boston Bruins fan, I feel compelled to say my piece on this and hopefully just move on. There are not many, if any, excuses for what happened, but anyone who has watched the game knew it was getting way out of hand. I think everyone could feel something bad was going to happen, and it did. I'm not sure if this was poor game management, as I would say, but the tone of the game escalated very quickly. I have not seen that in my year or so of being a new old hockey fan. What Thornton did was wrong. What Neil did was wrong. I feel bad for Thorty because I think he is generally a good guy, and this is his first major slip-up of many years playing that role. That's pretty impressive. Everyone has allowed so many mistakes. I think both John Scott and Thorty are still in the oops, mistake, slip-up box. There's something to be said for that. I mean, and it's what's probably going to save Thornton from a massive suspension is the idea that he has played this role for many years and he's not been a guy that's been called to the carpet too many times. Brendan Moore, as a Bruins fan, I think Thornton should get more than Neil. It seems like I'm the only one around here who looks at this and says, well, yes, their player did something wrong, but I expect more out of my own players. No one comprehends this, and it's very annoying. I'd also like to take this chance to apologize to my parents for when I did this as a kid. It's so true. Oh, man. David B. writes in, Thornton, 3 games, Orpik took a dive. Well, of course he did. Steven Schieffer writes in, Neil got 5, deserved 10, 5 for the act, and another 5 for the smug BS and lack of contrition afterwards. You know, that was a little bit newsy from Rossi there. It was, I guess that story may have just posted on the Trib, but like I didn't know that there was internal heat on Neil for what he said and what he didn't say in that post-game presser. Because you're right, it embarrasses the organization when you don't get that contrition, when you don't get that reflection, when you don't get that idea of, I did something wrong. Even if you want to defend it, even if you want to say, Marshawn took a headshot of me earlier in the game, this is my comeuppance. If you want to just explain the action, that's a complete 180 from saying, I didn't see him there, and acting like a coy, petulant little child like Neil was when he was running around trying to kabong flyers during the playoffs in 2012. So that was good. That was good information from Rossi, and it does show that the Penguins as an organization do practice what they preach a lot of times in these instances, because the Cook thing was the same thing. You know, they stood up and said, look, don't do this anymore. You're not going to be here. They'll never do that to Neil, but at least they care, right? They care about how the organization looks. Stephen continues, Thornton deserves 25, 15 for the heinous act that was far outside the realm of what hockey is. Another 10 for, to paraphrase league speak, conduct detrimental to the league. He not only injured a player, he hurt his team and embarrassed the league. They don't do that enough, by the way, the NHL. The idea that that if you do something that embarrasses the league, it should factor into your suspension. And I firmly believe that in some cases, there is behavior that embarrasses the league more than in other cases. And they should factor that in. I mean, the image of the NHL today, I did the NBC show that they have with Yahoo this afternoon. And that's a topic. The topic for hockey is what Thornton did. And to a lesser extent, Neil. It's not the Bruins beating two good teams. It's not the Ducks winning a huge game against the Blues. It's none of that. It's this nonsense. So there is something to be said for conduct detrimental to the league, unless you're someone who believes the league is where it is today, because sometimes that conduct can be something that's appealing to people, casual fans, although we all know that fighting is deterring casual fans from watching hockey. Jonathan both writes in, Neil got 5 games, deserved 1 or 2 more. I'm a Pens fan, but I am sick of his little cheap shots after plays. It's like a kid who didn't get the toy they wanted, so they throw a temper tantrum. All these little elbows, knees have to disappear from his game. His post-game answer was also lame. Again, Rossi wouldn't go there, but he's a dirty player. No one can do what he did against the Flyers in the playoffs, running around on that shift. And listen, like I said, lucky Neil. Didn't injure Marchand, didn't injure Giroux, didn't injure Couturier, or else it would have been more. Because he clearly doesn't respect his opponents. Andy S. Thornton should get 20 games minimum. This is a Bertuzzi or Simon type situation. The comparisons can be drawn. I don't think it deserves 20 games, but I also don't think that you're out of line if you want to compare it to Bertuzzi. The spirit of the thing, as they say. Aaron White. I'd give Neil 10 for being an asshole. Or at least a guy with vision that apparently should make finding a puck difficult if you can't see a person in front of you. Thornton gets 5, maybe 6. It looks bad, but I don't think he intended to go the way it went. This whole thing does revisit 2 tenets of the Department of Player Safety that we often debate on this show, which are intent and suspending to the injury. What was Thornton's intent there? To put him on a stretcher? What was Neil's intent there? I mean, something to be said for that, right? Kim writes in, to be quite honest, I'm over what Neil and Thornton deserve. Shanny usually turns me around, so I agree with him and have no problem with the 5 he gave Neil. What I'd like is a little less good old boys commentary from the media. I'd like to see Grapes not nullify everything he says about the incident by admitting that he loves Thornton and couldn't care less about the Hockey Night in Canada panel's idea that big hitting necessitates answering the bell. I'd like the Pittsburgh media to continue pointing out that James Neal is walking a thin line here. I'd like the Boston media to stop perpetrating the idea that Brooks Orpik is faking a concussion and that he deserved what he got, and that Thornton is somehow a martyr because he's really sorry and sent someone off on a stretcher. I'd like to watch hockey. It's a good cherry on the sundae there from Kim. Thanks for writing in. Joining us now on the line, the head coach of the Phoenix Coyotes, Dave Tippett, joins us on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. It's me, Greg Wyshynski, rolling solo right now. Mr. Merrick is off doing TV things. How are you, Mr. Tippett?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Good to have you back on the show.
No problem.
Coyotes doing their thing in the Western Conference right now. I did see a problem that's cropped up in like the last week or so with the team. Starting games off the right way in the first period. What's been the issue with the Coyotes, and how do we resolve it?
Well, the last road trip, we've actually kind of rectified some of those. We played the 3 games out west, and and actually our first periods were pretty competitive, pretty good. So we there was a couple games in a row where we took some penalties early in the game. We take the Chicago game. We put Chicago on a 5-on-3 a minute into the game, and that spells trouble. And not just for the Coyotes, that spells trouble for anybody that's willing to do that. So some bad bounces, maybe a few softer goals and some discipline in the first period are some issues that we've talked about and trying to rectify.
For those of us who don't see you every night, I think the story for the Coyotes this season has been this offensive juggernautism that you've sometimes exhibited, but then the defense hasn't necessarily been the kind of defense that we've come to expect from a Dave Tippett team. What's happened differently for you this season defensively than in the previous couple of seasons in Phoenix?
Well, what we've done, we've tried to expand our game, and you know, the last 3 or 4 years we've been just try to be as tight as we can and not give anything up, because it was our skill level was couldn't drag us out of games we weren't into. So we want to become not just a team in that middle group that are trying to survive. We want to get to that top level, and to do that, we had to add some pieces that we think are better offensive players, and we had to continue to grow some of the players within our organization to be better offensive players. So we're looking for that happy balance that gets us to the next level. Now, the scoring, the power play has certainly benefited from that, but our defensive game hasn't been as sharp as we'd like. Our penalty killing has really hasn't done as well as we like. So there's some areas like that we've put an extra onus on here the last week or so, and we haven't got the results we wanted for them, but I think we're going to hopefully find that happy balance we're looking for to become a very good team.
And I was going to ask you, I mean, that could be just a case of some players that are sort of overcompensating right now, too much of a concentration on getting the offense right and the defense suffers, and maybe there is that balance that could be struck down the line.
Well, that's what we're looking for. You see the top teams in the league all have that happy balance where if you want to play a tight checking defensive game, they're comfortable in that. And if some things happen in a game where you get behind or your power play needs to get your goal, you have to have the ability to make those count. So that's the kind of team we want to be. We want to be able to play any style of game and find a way to win on that. In that mode, I think in the years, last 2 or 3 years, we've been very much a solid defending team. If we ever did get behind, it was tough for us to come back. And we found some ways to come back this year already. Now, that being said, like you talked earlier, we don't want to get behind us if that's all possible, but those are all part of the growing process, I guess.
You take a guy like Mike Smith, I imagine he's growing along with this process. Goals against over 3 right now for a guy that we're not used to seeing with stats like that. Is he seeing more, is he seeing different kinds of chances than he did in the past because of the changes in front of him? Or is Mike just kind of having a bit of a struggle of it this year?
No, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, there's some games that Mike has been excellent, and we've given up far too many chances, and he's held us in. You know, I was talking to some media people this morning about 3 weeks ago. I didn't like the way we were playing at all, and we'd beat San Jose, and we were winning some games, but still giving up far too much. But Mike Smith was cleaning everything up, and then on this last road trip, we won 1 out of 3 and lost 1 in overtime, and we gave up far less chances. I like the way we played last week, far better than 3 weeks ago when we won 4 or 5 in a row. So you're looking for that happy balance, and Schmitty, there's been times when he's been excellent, and then there's other times where, you know, I think he knows he'd like to be a little better.
We are huge fans on this show, and by that I hope that means we've been ahead of the curve on praising Oliver Ekman-Larsson as being one of the finest defensemen in this league. If you could extol the virtues of this fantastic defenseman who hopefully will get some Norris love this year.
Well, he is an unassuming player. I mean, he just does everything right. He's a very intelligent player, has a very high skill level. His skating, his shot, his ability to see the ice is excellent. And the other thing that the great attribute he has is he wants to be a top player. And he wants the minutes. He wants to play against top players every night. He wants the responsibility on the power play. He has all the tools in place to do that. Now it's just going to, you know, be a matter of when does he really start to get the recognition he deserves, and his game grows to where it's even if you don't know a lot about our team, you'll know his name. So he's just a phenomenal young player that is going to get better and better.
And then I covered this this guy in with Washington last year, and obviously I'm impressed with the with what he brings to a team offensively. How's Mike Barbero kind of fit in with you guys this year?
Mike's been excellent. Obviously, I had a history with him before he came here in Dallas. He's a player that a couple of years ago we had Ray Whitney when we went to the conference finals, and Ray added that extra skill to our lineup that could really help. And Ribeiro's done the same thing. He's a high skill player. The thing that I like about Ribeiro is a lot of his points this year have come at crucial times when your power play needs a goal, or he got the tying goal the other night or an assist on the tying goal in Vancouver the other night. Like, his points come at crucial times, and he's been a very valuable player for us.
Good to hear. Do you look at the standings any differently with realignment now than you did in previous seasons?
No, you look at them, you know where you're at, and you know where everybody else is at, and you know where you have to get to, and who you have to leapfrog, so you keep track of them. But, really, we talk all the time about is our play will dictate our standings, and if we play well, we'll have a chance to move up in the standings, and if we don't, the standings will dictate how we played. So certainly you watch everybody else. The division games are still of the utmost importance. And, I think these wild card situations will, the last 10 or 20 or 25 games of the season is going to be very interesting to see how that crossover could happen.
Do you ever give the Eastern Conference the stink eye and say, come on, you got to be kidding me. I got to hop over Vancouver getting the playoffs, and you guys can make the playoffs and apply with a record.
We got, if you start worrying about everybody else, that means you're not worrying enough about your team. So we got lots of issues on our team. We're scratching and clawing to try to get where we're at. If we're worried about what the Eastern team standings are, the one thing I say about the Eastern teams, I say all the time to our players is, these are points that other teams can't get. I mean, they're very important games because every point you're giving away, that's a chance for another team to get that point in your conference. So every game, I mean, that's just coaches spin everything. When you're tired, you got to play tight. When you're fresh, the other team's tired, you got to go at them. I mean, when you're playing an East team, you got to take those points away from them. And you're playing a division team, those are 4-point games. So there's never an easy game. The coach is going to spin it any way he can to try to get his team to play better.
Two more for you real quick. First, were you happy to see Ilya Bryzgalov get another crack at this thing in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, Briz is a good guy. I enjoyed having Briz. We spent a couple of years together. I actually talked to Briz the other night, and we played in Edmonton. It's great to see him back in the league. He's a quality player, and it's, for whatever reason, some more times it works in places, other times it doesn't. So it's good to see him back, and I'm sure he'll play well.
And then finally, Bill Daly on Hockey Central on Sportsnet today said that the Phoenix Coyotes have inquired about hosting an outdoor hockey game to the National Hockey League. Are you ready for the joy of an outdoor hockey game to visit your life, Dave Tippett?
You'll have to talk to the new owners. I'm sure they're enthused about doing anything they can to help bring notoriety to our team. And, I know it'll be interesting to see how the game in LA goes this year. But, I think all teams, when you see other teams getting events like that, every team would like to have something like that to try to promote their team.
And obviously we are very pleased that you can use the phrase new owners. We hated talking to you and having to talk about all that ownership crap all the time. So it's good to have that in place and things going well. So continued success, Dave Tippett, and thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks very much. Take care.
There's Dave Tippett on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Yeah, Hockey Central today. Daly says the Coyotes have told him they're prepared to host an outdoor game. Listen. I want nothing more in life than Phoenix to succeed as a National Hockey League city. But the idea of putting a Phoenix Coyotes game in a football stadium, I mean, maybe the gimmick gets people out. I don't know. Maybe you give away something. Maybe you give away bags of pot. I don't know what you do. But I just kind of feel a little nervous about the attendance aspect of an outdoor game in Phoenix. I don't know. Maybe I'm alone on that. Maybe I'm just overreaching. Maybe I'm being stereotypical about the concerns about that franchise. But yeah, just a little back of the head thinking, all right, outdoor game, football stadium, Phoenix Coyotes. Maybe you bring out the tarps for the upper deck for that one. Anyways, that's a supersized edition of the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast today. Merrick for the first 20 minutes, Wyszynski the rest of the way. Thank you to Merrick for finding time in his busy Rogers Communications Sportsnet schedule to join us on the podcast that bears his name. Joe Haggerty, thank you for bringing the Boston propaganda. Thank you to Rob Rossi for bringing the Pittsburgh propaganda. And thank you for Dave Tippett for being Dave Tippett. I am Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports. Obviously on Puck Daddy, continuing coverage of all of the suspensions coming down. FNUF and Thornton still yet to go as of this broadcast. Also a little Bobrovsky love from Dimitri coming up. Also a bit on penalty plus minus. Who draws the most? Who takes the most in this fine league of ours? That's all we got. Thanks for joining us, and thanks again for all the debate. Look, I know Merrick and I do not put the verses in Merrick versus Wyszynski when it comes to the fighting thing. We're very like-minded. He might be a little bit more modulated in his thinking than I am, but I'm coming around on stuff. Like, I know I don't get any credit for changing my mind on fighting, but listen, I'll admit on the record that if you want to make the argument that fighting is not a deterrent, I will agree with you in 2013. The role's changed. It really has. I know Haggerty wants to sell Thornton as an enforcer and a guy who prevents shit from happening, but shit still happened, right? So clearly, it does not work the way it's supposed to. That said, I think the role of the enforcer will not change if fighting is banned. It'll just mean he can't fight. Doesn't mean he ain't going to enforce. Doesn't mean he ain't going to be looking for some cheap shot against the Brooks Orpik type to quote-unquote answer for his sins on a hit against Louis Erickson. Don't buy it for a second that won't exist. Anyways, thanks for joining us. We'll see you again down the line. Bye.